Okay, good day everyone, and welcome to this lecture series about contemporary South Asia. This lecture series is organized jointly with the University of Jyväskylä Department of History and Ethnology and the Finnish University Network of Asian Studies. So this week we will be hearing from several visiting lecturers that all have will talk about different aspects of South Asia and especially India. So I will give you a very brief introduction to South Asia, and my lecture will be followed by Dr. Ravinder Kaur's take on globalization, particularly in India. And on Wednesday, Maushinka Renganathan from University of Madras in Chennai, India, will talk about caste and caste politics, followed by Dr. Anastasia Pilyavsky's lecture on democracy in South Asia. And Dr. Pilyavsky is from University of Cambridge, Girton College. And on Thursday we will have Dr. Minna Säävälä from the Family Federation of Finland, and she will talk about affinity and family relations, specifically in India, based on her own research over there. And finally, on Friday, the last day of the lectures, we will have Dr. Jyri Komulainen from University of Helsinki to talk about religion in South Asia, and I guess he will be focusing on India as well. And finally, our own professor of ethnology, Sirpa Tenhonen, will be talking about urbanization in South Asia. So first, it would be interesting to discuss the concept of South Asia to begin with. It's a rather recent term, actually. It has been around for roughly half a decade. Before, the area we are discussing in this lecture series was called South Asia, people very generally talked about India or Greater India or the Indian subcontinent and so on. And South Asia has never really been a unified geopolitical region. But what we mean by South Asia during this lecture series is roughly this area centering around India. I will talk about very briefly about the individual countries of South Asia in a minute. So as you might know, once upon a time there was a river called Sindhu, which was pronounced as Hindu by the neighboring peoples of Persia and the Arabs, and eventually the Greek pronounced it Indus, and in English the river was called and is still called the Indus River. So the people who resided along the river and beyond the river Indus were thought to be inhabiting the Indian land. So there is the origin of the word India itself. So it comes from the river. So in the early days, when people in Europe talked about India, they meant roughly this part of the world, the South roughly the South Asia we are talking about today as well. Another perhaps a bit more specific way to define South Asia is the geographic or geological way. The South Asian tectonic plate is clearly defined, and as you might know, it penetrates north and has created the Himalayan mountains. So if we want to define the borders of South Asia, again very roughly, it is surrounded by the Indian Ocean, the Himalayas, the Hindu Kush mountains, and that's again roughly what we call South Asia. The countries we will talk about today as South Asian countries are the following ones: Afghanistan, as you might know, situated here, Bangladesh, smaller country right beside India, or you should notice that India is sort of surrounding Bangladesh. Bhutan, a small mountainous kingdom here, and India is a very sort of central part of South Asia. Maldives are kind of a small group of islands. It's not even shown on the map here, but they are located somewhere here. Nepal, the home of Mount Everest here, very mountainous area as well. Pakistan here, and Sri Lanka here. So that is something that is most commonly known as South Asian countries. According to some categorizations and definitions, these areas and countries also can be included in the definition of South Asia. Sometimes the British Indian Ocean Territory, which is I guess located here somewhere outside of the map, is included in the definition, although the territory is, I would say, kind of insignificant. There's some islands, but the population of the islands is, I guess, somewhere around 5,000 or 6,000. It's basically an army base by the United Kingdom and United States. Sometimes, and I've seen this in some United Nations reports, even Iran here is included in South Asian countries. Mauritius, an island close to Madagascar, which is not shown on the map, is sometimes included in South Asia. And of course, Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, here, and the area of Tibet can be included in the definition. So please keep in mind that what we consider as South Asia is and the countries that are listed within the definition is kind of flexible. If you look at the population density map here, the darker areas mean more densely populated areas. You can see that the northern parts of India and Bangladesh and the Indus River, areas around along the River Indus, are the most densely populated areas. Statistically, the average population density in South Asia is 400 people per square kilometer. If we compare that with the population density of European Union, we see that it's almost four times more densely populated area. Perhaps this is a more this is a better picture of population density when you look at South Asia at night from the space. You see, the more lit up the area is, the more densely populated it is. So again, you see the areas along the River Indus and the northern Indian, North Indian areas here. The overall population of South Asia is 1.7 billion, which means that every fifth person, or actually more close to being every fourth person, to be exact, is a South Asian on the planet. So it is, population-wise, it is a very significant area. One third, roughly one third of South Asians are urban people. So South Asia is dominantly still a rural population. If we compare it to Europe, for example, where I think one fourth of the population lives in rural areas, we could say that Europe is a very urban place compared to South Asia. Although our images of South Asia might tell us otherwise. If we take a look at life expectancy at birth in South Asia, it's roughly 67 years, whereas in Europe it's 81 years. In South Asia, the average gross domestic production per capita is a bit over 3,000 American dollars. We compare it to European Union GDP per capita, it's 10 times more here. As for women in South Asia, on average, a woman, a South Asian woman, has 2.6 kids, whereas in Europe, a woman has one kid less. As for political representation in South Asian parliaments, 19% of the representatives are female. Again, if we want to compare it with EU, we have about 26% of the representatives female. In Finland, I guess we have even more than that, like over 40% of the representatives are women. Religion-wise, again, very rough figures. In South Asia, about 60% of the population is are followers of Hinduism. 30% are Muslim, and the remaining 10% are either following Jainism, Christianity, Buddhism, or Sikhism, or some other smaller religion or so-called tribal religions. So to go into a very brief history of the area, it's good to start with the Indus Valley Civilization, something that I'm sure all of you have read about in high school. It's, I guess, third of the great river valley civilizations of the world, following the Egyptian and the Mesopotamian civilizations. Not very much is known about the civilization, other than they had relatively developed cities with even like street grid plans and even sewer systems, spas, swimming pools, and that kind of things. Riding system, although it's not very well known. There is a theory that the Indus Valley Civilization people are the forefathers and foremothers of the present day Dravidian people residing in the south of India, but I don't think there's very valid proof to it, but nevertheless it's an interesting theory. It has been written that they had these priest kings, of which there's this statue, but for some reason their civilization either gradually just vanished or were taken over by the migrating Aryans from the northwest. It is still not very well known what caused the disruption of the civilization. It might have been the climate change or something like that. Anyway, then the Indo-European speaking peoples, so-called Aryans, started to migrate to South Asia from what is the present-day northern Afghanistan or that thereabouts. So they began to inhabit the northern part of South Asia. And slowly there began to be more organized kingdoms and republics, the Persian Empire in the northwest, and the Mauryan Empire with Chandragupta Maurya was was the first of the great South Asian empires. Here's a statue of Chandragupta Maurya. You might also know King Ashoka, or maybe have read about him. He was his rule was considered at least afterwards as a reign of peace, and he was interested in Buddhism, and during his era Buddhism spread out in the Indian subcontinent. So as you can see, the political map of South Asia evolved through time. Here's some Scythian coins. Scythians were northwestern people that had very developed army that used horses. So I won't go into more details on these particular kingdoms and empires. Then there's a Gupta Empire, another great empire in in the northern part of present-day India. As you can see, Tibet began to organize as a state or kingdom, like. Here's an interesting picture of a stone carving in Mahabalipuram from the Pallava age in South India. And here in the about in the, during the turn of the first millennium, there was a Rajput kingdom. Rajput actually means the son of a king, and they were very well-known fierce warriors that the British army used also almost a thousand years later. Here in the picture you can see Rajput soldiers in the 19th century. Again, you can see how the political map evolved. And then we come to the Mughal Empire, of which perhaps the most well-known symbol is the Taj Mahal, built by Shah Jahan for his wife, deceased wife, Mumtaz Mahal. Taj Mahal receives, I guess, 2 million tourists per year as guests. I guess it was actually built earlier than 1648, so this is not... No, it was later, it was 1653 actually when it was built, so this year is wrong. Then we come to the 18th century when the British started to get more and more interested in the riches of India, and the British East India Company started to conquer land in the east of the peninsula. And by the mid-19th century, most of South Asia was ruled by the British East India Company. There's a coin by the East India Company, 1 rupee coin from 1835. And in the advent of the First World War, the British Empire was covering almost all of South Asia. There were also other European nations that had colonies in South Asia, but there were a lot smaller. Like the French had their Pondicherry colonies here in south of India and on the western coast somewhere here, and the Dutch also had some areas colonized, as well as the Portuguese. Here's a picture of Punjabi army employed by the British forces. The British, as you might know, used the local people in their armies. So. And finally, in 1947, India gained independence from the British. But immediately, the independent India was divided into India and West Pakistan and East Pakistan. because of mostly religious reasons. East and West Pakistani people were Muslims. You can see Ceylon, or nowadays Sri Lanka, as an independent nation. And here you can see Kashmir, which is still a disputed area to some extent between Pakistan and India. And here's a present day political map of South Asia. West and East Pakistan have been renamed as Pakistan and Bangladesh. And that's about it. So now I would like to take a very short look at the individual countries in South Asia in alphabetical order. First we go to Afghanistan. The population of which is roughly five times that of Finland's. And the area of Afghanistan is twice as big as Finland's, to give you some comparison. The governance is Islamic Republic, and the ethnic groups are Pashtun, Tajik, Hazara, Uzbek, and some other minor ethnicities. Here's a picture of a Pashtun man, I believe. The languages spoken in Afghanistan are Dari, or Afghan Persian, and Pashtun, mainly. And plus, there are some minor regional languages as well. The religion, the main religion is of course, Islam. As for gross domestic product, it is, as you can see, very low compared to, for example, that of Finland's. So per capita, Finland, a Finnish citizen is producing 75 times more worth compared to a statistically normal Afghani person. Then we go to Bangladesh, which is a very populous country. About 30 times more populous than Finland, but the area of Bangladesh is only roughly half the size of Finland, so it's a very densely populated area. The government is a parliamentary republic, and the main ethnic group is the Bengalis, but there are some indigenous ethnic group as well. The main language is Bengali, and again, there are some indigenous languages as well. Here's a Bangladeshi woman. And the religion, the main religion is Islam, but there is a small minority of Hindus as well, plus 1% of other religions. As for economy, the GDP per capita is almost $1,000 American. Again, compared to Finland, it's about 2% of the GDP per capita of a Finnish average Finnish person. So it's relatively poor country. Then Bhutan, country that used to be very isolated and has opened up only recently. It has a population roughly the size of Helsinki, the Finnish capital. But the area is very small. You could fit about 8 Bhutans inside of Finland. The government is a constitutional monarchy, but it was only in 2008 that they had their first democratic elections. So it's a very fresh democracy. There are 3 main ethnic groups, and I have no idea how to pronounce this, but I will try. The Ngalops reside in the western part of Bhutan, and actually the name means something like the west, western people of the west. The Sharchops reside in the east, and Lhotshampas that are of Nepali descent, mostly situated in the south or southern areas of Bhutan. And here's a picture of Bhutanese women. And the languages spoken in Bhutan are Bhutanese and other so-called Tibeto-Burman languages, as well as Nepali language. The religions, the main religions are Buddhism in majority, plus Hinduism. As for the economy of Bhutan, is well over 2,000 American dollars per capita in gross domestic product. So it's not the poorest of South Asian countries. It's more like in a higher half of South Asian countries. Then we come to India, which I would say is the most hegemonic politically and economically hegemonic country in South Asia, and of course central geographically. The population of India is well over 1 billion people, so a lot more than Finland's population. But the area is not as big compared to Finland, only 10 times bigger than Finland's area. India is a parliamentary republic. It is a federation, which means that there are 29 states plus some, is it 7 union territories? Is it 7 or 9 union territories? Do you remember? Okay, 7 union territories. And it's kind of problematic to define the ethnicities, the ethnic groups of India. Such a big country, like, depends on the collective identity, which is often based on language, religion, area, etc. Here's a picture of a Chennai slum area, actually. Chennai is one of the major Indian cities in the south of India. So, linguistically, India is divided into north and the south, to put it very roughly. In the north, there are the Indo-Aryan languages, for example Hindi, and in the south there are the Dravidian languages such as Tamil. And I would say this is a significant cultural division as well. There is sort of, again, to put it very roughly, this difference in identity between the northern and the southern Indians. But one of the official languages of India is English, and many educated people speak English as well. As for religion, Hinduism is a most common religion with its multiple branches. Islam is a very significant minority, and Christianity and other religions make up the rest of the religious field. The per capita GDP is $1,500, which is more or less in the middle income countries in South Asia. Then a few words about the Maldives, the small group of islands in the Indian Ocean. Its population is just a little over 300,000, which is the size of three Jyväskylä cities, more or less. So it's not much. The area is even smaller, only two Jyväskylä. So it is not a very significant player in South Asian politics, but it's a very popular tourist destination. The governance in Maldives is called Presidential Republic, which means that the president is the head of the government and the head of the state at the same time. So the president has a lot of power in the Maldives. And the ethnic group of Maldives is called the Maldivians. Here they are convening sort of to protest against climate change, which is threatening the islands because of their low elevation. Even small changes in the sea level might be very disastrous to Maldives. So they're very worried about climate change and global warming, as is understandable. The language of the Maldives is called Maldivian or Divehi, as it's locally called. It's mostly a Muslim country, and I even read somewhere, I haven't confirmed this, but I read somewhere that Islam is the only religion allowed to be practiced publicly in the Maldives, but I'm not sure. Do you have any idea? Okay. As for the economy, it's a very rich area, comparatively. I think it's the richest country in South Asia. Then we come to Nepal, the mountainous country north of India, the population of which is five times that of Finland, and the area is about half of Finland. It's a parliamentary republic. It used to be a monarchy, but due to especially due to Maoist movement, political movement, there was a regime change, and the monarchy was overthrown. There are several ethnic groups in this mountainous area, usually if a country has a lot of mountains, it's usually the home of various ethnic groups, because it's easy to be sort of isolated and to uphold your own way of life and culture and language. So these are among the most populous ethnic groups in Nepal: Chhetri, Brahmins. Brahmins, I would note that is also the name of a caste. So it's kind of interesting how castes or the name of a caste can also be a name of an ethnic group. So perhaps Mausinka in her lecture will open this sort of conceptual situation a little later on. Here's a nice picture of a Kathmandu street corner. And the languages of Nepal are, of course, Nepali, the official languages, plus several Tibeto-Burman languages. The main religion is Hinduism, but I would even say that Buddhism is, compared to its size, the percentage in Nepal is relatively famous in Nepal. So it has a good public image, I would say. As for economy, Nepal is relatively poor. The GDP is only a little less, a bit less than $700, which makes it a poor country. For example, the Finnish GDP is 70 times more than an average Nepalese person's worth economically. Okay, then we come to Pakistan, which has also a very large population compared to Finland, at least. And again, the area is not that big compared to its size, at least if we compared with Finland. So a very high population density. The government is a federal parliamentary republic, very similar to that of India. There are Indo-Aryan and Iranian ethnic groups. This doesn't really depict any particular ethnic group, but Pakistani, I guess this is women's cricket, national cricket team. As you might know, cricket is a very popular pastime and a sport in South Asia, very popular indeed. The languages spoken in Pakistan are Urdu, the official language, English, another official language, Punjabi, Pashto, Sindhi, and other regional languages. And Pakistan is mostly a Muslim country. And the GDP is, compared to other South Asian countries, not the poorest, but more like climbing up to the middle income countries in South Asia. Then to Sri Lanka, the island next to the southern peninsula of India, the population of which is four times that of Finland. And the area is actually not the same, but fit for Sri Lanka's inside of Finland. The government is parliamentary republic, and there are three significant ethnic groups: the Sinhalese, the Tamil, and the Moor. As you might know, there has been a civil war in Sri Lanka, which they have recently started to get over with, and started to reconstruct the country in peace, in relative peace, I would say. Here's a picture of a Sri Lankan fisherman with a good catch. The languages spoken are Sinhalese and Tamil. As for religions, Buddhism is a major religion, but there are followers of Hinduism, some percentage of Muslim people, and some Christians as well. So religiously, it's religion-wise, it's a very diverse country. And the GDP is, I would say, it's in the upper income countries in South Asia. If you want to know more about South Asia, the individual countries, I do recommend very strongly that you go to the web pages of these South Asia research institutions. They are very informative, and they have good literature, bibliographies, and links to literature. One of them is the University of London South Asia Institute, the University of British Columbia, Center for India and South Asia Research. The Australian National University has a, I would say, a very vibrant South Asia Research Institute. And of course, Harvard, probably the most known South Asia institute in the world. But there are some others as well. University of Texas at Austin has their own, and UC Berkeley. And there's one also in University of Edinburgh. So that was my brief introduction to South Asia.